This is the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on www.prn.fm. This radio presentation replays my weekly TV show, Refounding America with Peter R. Breggin, MD, which can be watched on Brighteon.tv, and it's available on Roku. I interview guests who are heroes and pioneers in confronting the global predators who are behind COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccines, corrupt public health and medicine, global warming, the Great Reset, and other justifications for destroying the Western democracies. They are stealing our countries, our freedoms, our dignity and hope, and our jobs and our savings. For documentation of this worldwide tragedy, read our new book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, by Peter and Ginger Breggin. Together, my guests and I explore what is happening and what we each can do to refound America and inspire the world. Thank you for your courage in facing these challenges and standing up for liberty. Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Well, hello, 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 my wonderful friends. Today, I'm going to have a guest on that hasn't had a lot of TV time and FaceTime, which I think is fair to say. She describes herself in one of the biographies I found in an interesting way. She says, American, Black, doctor, uncensored. And I would add to that, and also trained as a lawyer. Her name is Marilyn Singleton. She's an MD and a JD. In the meanwhile, our book is doing good, is taking off some more. Remember, you can buy it on wearethepray.com in the United States. Wearethepray.com at a discount, and you can get it around the world on Amazon and all the other platforms. And follow us, go to breggin.com to follow our alerts. See you soon. Hi, folks. Meet Marilyn Singleton. She's a friend. We've never met outside of my interviewing her and her talking to me on the phone. But she's like, Marilyn, you're very much one of those people that I think would just be a dear friend. And I would say if it were different times, but we wouldn't have met in different times. And we're meeting because we're Americans who believe in freedom and see it not wasting away, being systematically dismantled. We're both doctors. We see the healthcare system being dismantled. Marilyn, really has had a very amazing career in medicine, by the way. One of the things she points out that I think is interesting is that when you wanted to go to Stanford, you were told by the school you were going to they didn't take Negroes. And I just don't know how people manage with those kind of threats and discourages put ahead of them. I ran into a very little bit when I was Jewish about that. When I told my guidance counselor I wanted to go to Harvard, she said, that, well, they don't take people like you. I said, what do you mean? People? Well, you know, people don't have a lot of table manners. I've never seen my table manners. I was president of the class most years. I mean, it was so bizarre and out of the blue. But to come at it from being African-American in America and to be told that, well, she showed him. She went on to Stanford and graduated. And she went to the University of California, San Francisco Medical Center, Medical School. And then she went on eventually to Harvard's Beth Israel Hospital. These are like the plums of plums you get when you're really a top student. And then finally, she went on to be a professor of anesthesiology at Johns Hopkins. And again, these are like, it's like you're picking out the most respectable places you can be. And then she was in private practice. And now, like so many of us, she's devoting, I think, most of your energy probably to standing up for America and doing things for America. Some of you know that Ginger and I are doing our very, very first radio show together, and we have recorded it. And both of us realized that in all our years of relating, the one thing we had not done was, you know, to share hosting something together for an hour. And it really brought out, how are we going to do together? What are we going to look like? You know, I mean, is it okay just the way we sit and chat together for an hour or two every evening and debrief? That's probably not going to work. And we both ended up having to work through a certain amount of anxiety. And if you want to see the result, and this is very relevant to Maryland as well, this Thursday at 5 p.m. on America Out Loud, you can listen to on the radio Peter and Ginger Breggin. We are part of a new series that we helped develop with Malcolm, who is the creator and the owner of America Out Loud, a new series medically related, but we're going to be moving in different kinds of directions as well, as I'm sure everybody will. And I suggested that Marilyn Singleton, Dr. Singleton, be one of the hosts, and she worked her way through that, and they talked about it. And Malcolm's a lot to deal with when you first talk to him. Malcolm is like the greatest bundle of energy on the face of the earth. In fact, Malcolm did something I couldn't do for 40 years. He said to Ginger, you got to go on radio with your husband. You got to do it. You got a great voice, he said. Got to do it. You know, you can't just be the brains behind it all. And he talked her into it. I couldn't do it. But I've been talking to her about it almost every day recently. And we also suggested Paul Alexander, marvelous Paul Alexander, and he's going to be going on Fridays. And Marilyn is going to be, whom we suggest, is going to be going on Wednesdays, I think.
Oh, I think Monday. Mondays.
You're going to start the show. And on Wednesdays is going to be Peter McCullough. I mean, I suggested Peter, but I didn't have to suject Peter because he's already there. Oh, he's already on America Out Loud, but now he's going to be on that lineup. And then another lineup is going to be some frontline docs. So that's going to be very interesting, too. So we're all joined together on America Out Loud. And Ginger and I are also doing a weekly column. We're more highfalutin, a little more elite than bloggers. We're weekly columnists on America Out Loud. And again, that's a kind of a big jump for both me and Ginger to do something weekly. But also she's actually writing some of them. She's a great writer. And I write some of them, and we'll, you know, we talk together about everything. So it's going to be a very interesting way to keep up with Ginger and Peter and Marilyn and Peter McCullough and some frontline docs and Paul as well. So I want to give a big thanks to that. And of course, we are not going anywhere. We've got our show here on Brighteon.tv, seen on Roku. And it also goes out on the Progressive Radio Network, where I've been for years and years and years and years and years. And we're in the top 1% of these radio shows that go out on the internet and watching. We just learned that. We're very happy about that. So we're doing a lot of exciting things. Marilyn, how does it feel to have to do something once a week?
It's kind of interesting. Let's put it that way. It kind of reminds me of what the nuns said when you turned in a drawing and it was actually very ugly, and they'd say, oh, well, that's interesting. So when I first signed up to do it, I thought, okay, what's that expression? Did you bite off more than you can chew? But you know what? Once you start getting into it, it's like, okay, I'm ready to do the next one, ready to do the next one. Oh, I just thought of something we could talk about. And then it's like, mm-hmm. Can I talk about that for 53 minutes? And so we'll find out. And then it suddenly, are they going to get bored? Will they get sick of listening to me? And it's like, you can't even worry about that. Just got to do your thing, huh?
Well, I think the way you're just talking right now would be just a great style for a radio show. It's very real. I'm always contained. I think all the media I do, I'm Dr. Bregan. I don't really relax and be myself very thoroughly. And I probably should start doing that. I mean, God, I'm 85 years old. If I'm not going to just relax and be myself. But I always feel like I've got the burden of God's assignments on my shoulders when I go out of the media.
Doctor, I think you doing the show with Miss Ginger is such a boon. I think one of the first things in doing one of these kind of shows is, if you're by yourself, is who am I talking to? I can't see who I'm talking to. You know, that's kind of the weird thing. And, you know, kind of don't you put a picture with 1,000 digital people in front of you and pretend that that's your audience, you know? So it's an interesting thing to be by yourself and just talking.
I've gotten used to it. I feel more peaceful than sitting with Ginger, even though I sit with her for hours talking and brainstorming and doing our war room with her mother joining in every day of my life. All of a sudden you discover communication glitches you weren't quite sure were there before. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. She has such insights. She has tremendous insights. And that comes out on the first show, and I'm really looking forward to it. You were talking about oligarchs. I don't think there's anything more important than talking about the ruling class and their connections, and of course that's what our book COVID-19: The Global Predators is about. And you've done a recent essay about it.
Yes. And what made me even go there was with the problems, the war, I'll just tell it like it is, the war between Russia and Ukraine, that everyone's talking about the oligarchs. And when the Hunter Biden laptop thing came up, he was dealing with the Ukrainian oligarchs and with the Russian oligarchs. And it's as though we in America are exempt. We aren't exempt. I feel like now we're the oligarchy par excellence. And COVID, along with many other things that COVID brought out, was this whole elitism. And early on, the good thing about it is, I think it opened some people's eyes that we do have this ruling class. And when Nancy Pelosi got her hair cut and Gavin Newsom got his $400 a plate dinner, complete with the California Medical Association lobbyists, which really is disgusting, at the same time telling us you're going to die if you don't throw a mask on, you're going to die if you don't stay home and don't see your friends. And it's like, well, how could you really believe that if you go out and do this? And it either means one thing, everything they said about COVID wasn't true, or two, you have such disdain for the people that you will just march around like I can't even say what I'm really thinking, that like you're the king or the queen.
Yeah. Who are you identifying as the oligarchs?
I forgot to turn that phone off. We have a
group. Well, you're a newbie, so I mean, you haven't done a ton of this.
I know. Have everything turned off, the sound on the computer. The one thing I can't turn off is if the people who live in the neighborhood all of a sudden have their gardeners come out all at the same time using the blowers that are illegal, but they use them anyway. But anyway, we have the whole billionaire class of like Zuckerberg and the social media people, that's one whole class, because it's not just the money, because there's several people that have plenty of money. I think in California we have 189 billionaires, but all of them aren't part of that oligarchy. So it's not just money, it's a mental state. It's that state where you're perfectly happy subjugating others.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's all the top tech people. I think the top five tech people, top five tech companies, I mean, they literally control the end of the election. In part, they did by keeping Trump off of YouTube and Twitter and all of his normal ways of communicating. And then when he set up an alternative, they got another one of the tech companies to knock it down. So we have, they're a very big part of it, of this whole oligarchy. It's interesting. I learned a whole new lesson about some of the ways that America's controlled. When about a week ago, Joe Biden, he's talking on March 21st, just 9 days ago or so, and he's talking to something called the Business Roundtable, and I'd never heard of it. I thought he was probably talking to, you know, a bunch of newsmen on a round table at MSN or CNBC, maybe, if it was really fancy or something like that. And he told this group outright that we're at an inflection point, and that we're going to have a new world order. He used the words new world order. And if it occurs every three or four generations, and we're going to lead, that we have these big changes, and we're going to lead this new world order. We've got to get the rest of the world into doing it. So I thought, who is he talking to? And it turns out he was talking to the top 200 presidents and executives in the United States. Mm. And that's what the Business Roundtable is, that they are the heads of, it's just mind-blowing to look. I'm looking at the list. It's just mind-blowing. Just looking at the A's, it was Abbott and Aflac, Amazon, American Airlines, American Express, Apple, AT&T, and then some of the B's, Bank of America, Bayer, USA, Best Buy, Lockheed Martin, MasterCard, McDonald's, Microsoft, Intel, JP Morgan Chase, Pfizer, who's everywhere, Oracle, PayPal. I mean, all these companies, and it wasn't any of their assistants or, you know, their assistant deputy directors. It was either you had to be the president or the CEO or both to be a part of this group. And I thought, is this going to be a shock to this group? So I tracked them down, and they actually went woke in 2019 and declared they were, after a lot of consultations I learned with the Klaus Schwab's group, the World Economic Forum, Davos, and they decided that they were going to start taking much more seriously stakeholders. And of course, they get to say who the stakeholders are that are taken seriously. They don't mean the American U.S. Congress. They don't mean the Supreme Court. They don't mean the American voters and who they elect. They don't mean individuals based on recognizing the Bill of Rights and freedom of individuals. They often mean Black Lives Matter, communist organization. They can mean IBM. They can mean anybody they choose. And they use it to put on a veneer of progressivism when they're corrupt capitalists, basically, with a veneer of corrupt progressivism. They're really not a part of the general two-party system, which is so fractionated anyway. There's so many predators in both parties. Globalists, we say globalists in both parties, don't care about America. My experience with these people is they're not patriotic. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in the Bill of Rights or Constitution. They believe in being predatory. They believe in doing what they can do. They work a lot with communist China. Here it is where what Google says is a conspiracy theory. Our president saying that our top execs have to be pushing a new world order. And it doesn't get defined. So the definition comes out of the UN. It comes out of the WHO, now wants to take over all of our healthcare facilities. That's their latest proposal in January. And American people people in office in America are agreeing with that, talking about it. The EU has gone wholeheartedly in. And that's the kind of thing the New World Order means. It means you don't have control over your own country. You give it up more and more to the globalists. No more sovereignty.
Well, this is a double-edged sword. One, calling it a New World Order or the term the Great Reset, yeah. It can be seductive. It's just like what Eric Hoffer said in True Believer, where when you want to have a new movement, you have to define it with terms that are undefined. It was one of the things. Now, he wrote in 1950s, so before Obama was even born, but the two words he always talked about were hope and change. And what ho, that's what Obama said, because you can't define it. Change, what's change? It could be change to anything. And hope, everybody defines hope differently. And it's the same with the reset. The reset could be a wonderful thing for all anybody knows, but we have no input into what the Great Reset
is. That's the point. Yeah.
These people have total control over it. They act like they care, but we know they don't care. I said they actually have disdain for us, that all they care about is their power and they don't care how they get it. And I think people have to open their eyes and see what's right in front of them.
Absolutely. I think that it's so important that we constantly remind ourselves and the people who listen to us that there is a framework that was the Great Reset, that was the Great New Movement, and that was the foundation of America. An essentially conservative revolution that said, King of England, back off. We've been giving you your due. We you control our trade. Isn't that enough? Let's go back to being the relatively free colonies we were. We don't want to fight. Please, please, please. But the globalists, and the King of England was a globalist, he talked about Great Britain, but he was an empire. It was a big empire, and they had the big East India Company, which was very much like a lot of what we have today, which is the government using industry and industry using the government to dominate other people. And the U.S. said no more domination of that degree. And we broke, and we did a constitution, we did a Bill of Rights. And if you want to reduce famine around the world, you help people understand the importance of a democratic republic, that is a constitutional republic where people vote, but they can't vote against minorities and take over because there are checks and balances. Human rights, individual rights, not human rights, I think, individual rights, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion comes first. That's how you end starvation. There's never been starvation, broad starvation, in a democratic republic. If you want to limit wars, democratic republics, there's hardly any war that's ever taken place between two democratic republics. And when democratic republics go to war, they rarely do, if ever, do the genocides that accompanied Hitler and Stalin and Mao, with really hundreds of millions of people killed in the genocides that these three regimes have perpetrated: Stalin in the USSR and Mao in Italy, China, and of course Hitler in Germany. And if you want to improve health care, help people become a constitutional democracy, we got the best health care in the world. Now that we're deteriorating, we're likely going to lose it. If we give up our sovereignty over health care, we'll lose it. But have sovereign nations that are constitutional democracies, and you make the world a better place. You want to reduce pollution. America was way ahead of other nations because it was a democracy. People complained about the water, complained about the air. We cleaned up, I believe, ahead of any other great country. And why? Because we were a constitutional democracy. I have to break now. I didn't give you enough word there. Well, folks, wonderful audience, welcome back to Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves, which we should talk more about. And I'm with Marilyn Singleton, MD, JD. And your thoughts, I kind of ran away with talking just about the importance of constitutional democracies, because we actually have the framework for making a better world, just like we made a better America and then other countries modeled after us in Europe and around the world. But please pick up on that and what you were thinking.
Well, just what came to mind as you were talking about this and changing the world and having a reset and people not really knowing what the reset was going to be. It seems what we're seeing in America now is in trying to go for this equity, not equality, but equity, two different things, and people jumping on board on this. It's like, well, it sounds good. It's one of those things, sounds good. But if you parse it out, it's not good, because rather than improving everyone and trying to make people rise to the top, it seems like they're trying to lower everyone down to the lowest common denominator. And when you get global about it, certainly there's other countries that don't have what we have in America, where you think even our people who are considered poor have microwave ovens, and many of them have cars, and et cetera. And we see things being pulled down to the lowest common denominator. And what really bothers me is after the BLM episodes, how this total lack of civility and the criminals just getting away with everything, theft. It reminds me so much. We spent time in El Salvador for several years, not consistently. We would go down with a group who helped out people in small villages with medicines and started a little clinic, and people didn't even have Tylenol. I mean, the very, very poor people. But when we were in the cities, every store had barbed wire around the parking lots, people with rifles at the front door of the store. And I feel like that's where we're coming when we have this in California, where you can't get arrested unless you steal more than $940. So people go in with plastic bags, and they know just what $940 is. They walk in, steal, and walk out of the store. Is this America? This is very disturbing to me, because it's commonplace. And someone was attempted rape in Walmart, and fortunately, and it reminds me of when you're talking about reclaiming America, the people in the store jumped on this guy, yelled at him, and pinned him down until the police got there. And this is what we have to do. And it won't always be that dramatic, but we have to have that same frame of mind that we've got to jump on the people who were raping us, the people who are financially raping us, and all of us have to get together, jump on them, and do something about it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're talking that way. That makes so much sense. Do you run into difficulty with African Americans who resent your being for America, for freedom, or are you pretty much isolated from that now?
I think now the other Black folks that I know probably think like me. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, and I'm sure you've found this, I'm not saying something so earth-shattering, that a lot of people feel the same way I do, but they don't express it because right. they don't want to be vilified by their friends. And where I see it is going to rallies that are bipartisan. It's like the no jab, no job rallies. Those were very bipartisan. And you saw a lot of minorities there because they were the ones who were losing their jobs. They couldn't work at home. They had to be the ones who actually had to go into wherever the workplace was. Yeah. And they didn't like the idea of being told what to do. And so there's more people who think along these freedom lines than you see from some of these phony surveys and all.
Yeah.
You know, where they've picked 500 people and you don't know where these 500 people came from. And then they say, oh, Black people feel X about X. And I think, how are you getting this information from 600 people that you called on a cell phone? So I just think, just like with everything else, we're being buffaloed by the media as far as what people really think, because people you see on the street, people you see in the grocery store that you pick up a conversation with, a lot of them feel the same way I do.
That's wonderful. I'm really glad to hear there's a change. I haven't seen any great change in the Jewish community. A friend of mine made a very interesting observation on my fellow Jews. You know, Jews often, as they lose their Jewish identity, they don't have a way to assimilate without becoming Christians, which is a difficult thing for Jews to do, even if they're trying to be non-Jews, although they can do it, and the Christian community welcomes them. But instead, for their identities, what Jews have tended to do is become progressives. And in America, with progressivism being so woke, so the way to go, so what's right, that even the big companies are spouting it, it's very simple for Jews to just, you know, without thinking, go along with that, to, you know, let go of their identity with Israel, as if it isn't going to make any difference if an atomic bomb gets a hydrogen bomb, whatever kind of weapon, biological weapon, wipes out Israel from Iran or some other source. I wish so much that that Jews could wake, and I'm glad to hear that African Americans are waking up. I haven't heard so much about the Jewish community making a waking up, and I certainly hope that will happen. Certainly hope it'll happen.
Well, you know what, Doctor? I think that Jews will wake up more, and my Jewish friends are waking up more. And you know what is doing it? I think this critical race theory teaching in schools is so anti-Semitic, you know. And many folks, many Jewish parents are saying, I don't want my child hearing this, that sometimes it takes being almost personally attacked before you realize the big picture. And that's what's happening now. I'm seeing it with Jews, and the same with the Asians. You look at the big Harvard lawsuit of the discrimination against Asians because they're too smart. You know, it used to be it was the Jews that were too smart. Now it's the Asians that are too smart. So now we have to keep them out of school. So these things realize what's that expression? They've gone too far. That
yeah.
a little of the wokenistas, a little of it was fine. And then you're starting to really be racist against Jews, racist against Asians. And I think even Black people see that, oh, well, you're going to give us reparations, or you're going to let us get in school more easily, or whatever. You could be the next target. So unless you treat everybody equally, anybody could be the target the next time. So I think people are waking up.
I hope so. I hope so. Do you think Trump's policies helped minorities in the country, African Americans, Hispanics, before he got into so much trouble with the globalists?
Absolutely. Excuse me. And you can look at the numbers and see that they did help. And you could look at rallies or whatever and see Latinos for Trump, Blacks for Trump, that these people didn't just come out of nowhere. They weren't plants at a rally. Yeah. And when you just hear people talk, look at what he did with the prison reform, which has totally been left in the dust. Mm-hmm. He was the one who did the prison reform, but somehow it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
And that, you know, yeah. Well, he must have hated Black people. Well, no, he didn't. And the numbers show it. And COVID, in what COVID? COVID is, it's so convenient for everything. When and you know, I'm talk about preaching to the choir. You and Ginger wrote that wonderful book, We Are the Prey. And it so much says what happened. And COVID was just the perfect excuse at the perfect time, just when everything was going really well for a lot of people. It's something to knock it down. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and it's looking more and more like it's was very carefully planned in very several different directions. There's new breaking news. Well, I've heard inklings of this before. There's new breaking news out that the NIH and Moderna created a vaccine and shipped it to North Carolina, to which was the favorite place of Anthony Fauci, to be studied down there, and it was a vaccine specifically for SARS-CoV, and it was a month before there was any hint of SARS-CoV breaking loose. So it's so clear. One of the questions raised, was it SARS-CoV-2? I don't see any particular evidence of that. The Chinese were making their own SARS-CoV viruses with us. We know that. Ginger and I documented that back in March of 2020. It just looks like there were just so many different efforts going out to get prepared for the SARS-CoV release. I mean, that's what's so clear. We track that in the book back to 2015, 16 and 17. They're talking about it's being a SARS-CoV virus. I think one of the hardest things for people to understand is that the people in charge actually do make plans. The folks who are these billionaires and these big corporations that I named earlier in the show, the people who are meeting every year at Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum, or men meeting at Mike Bloomberg's New Economy Forum. These people are talking among themselves. It's not by chance planning. It is, they have all these people at their conferences, and they have the Chinese communists at their conferences. Mm-hmm. They have Xi Jinping every time they can get him at their conferences. So it's just so important to understand that this is not all just a happenstance we're in. They really are using COVID-19. I do believe they intentionally released it, and that it was to stop the Trump administration. They did it early. I think they did it before they were quite ready, because Trump was reversing the entire globalist trend, closing the borders so America doesn't get leveled to be like every other country without its unique labor force, without its protections and its honest wages. Opening the border, shifting goods out of the country, manufacturing out of the country. Trump right away began reversing that. And I think they intentionally stopped him with COVID-19. And if you read the book, if you read COVID-19 and the Global Predators, you'll see what effort we didn't want to come to that conclusion. But all this huge investing that went on for 5 or 6 years in the pandemic, and in particularly in coronavirus, planning ahead of time that there was going to be Moderna and Pfizer in the U.S. that were going to have all the money and all the big boxes. You know, there could have been 50 other contending virus vaccine makers, and there weren't. These were the boys that Bill Gates and Fauci and Klaus Schwab wanted, and the World Health Organization went along with. Are you getting to that point where you're pretty much no longer believing in accidents?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that always bothered me about the way they treated COVID-19 was we'd had a SARS virus before in 2003. So it wasn't like it was the first time anyone had seen a SARS virus. But the way it was presented to the public, I mean, even the idea how it was NCOV, novel COVID virus, well, yeah, it was different from the first SARS, but it was still the same virus at its core. So why the big surprise and acting like, oh, you know, let's run around with our hair on fire. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do.
That's such a good point. I've never made that point. That's right. And the first virus is a heck of a lot more lethal than this one. And it got contained. We never even had a case originate in the U.S.
That's exactly right. So there's too many things that once you start to sit down and think about it, and you know, the famous connect the dots, I think a lot of times any of us, especially people who aren't totally immersed in it like we are, you don't want to believe that. So you don't want to see those dots connected. But there's at some point, like we said in the beginning, you've got to wake up, smell the coffee, and do something about it.
Thank you. We've got about 5 minutes left. I want to make sure that you get to talk about anything that's on your mind that you want to communicate to people. We can remind them about your show, your radio show. It's going to the first showing is going to be next week, isn't it? On
Monday, this coming Monday.
Yeah, it's coming Monday.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting thing just because there's so much going on that I think we're not talking about. And hopefully, I'm hoping that this whole series will get people who normally don't talk to each other to talk to each other. And one of the things I say at the end of the show, whether you agree with me or disagree, have other ideas, share it, because it might get some conversation going. This is one of the biggest things I think that was lost in COVID was people communicating with each other. And when you saw that they cut off people going to church, and which for some people is the only communication with other people that they get face to face. So talk about something being planned. That was just so clear. How is it that you can go to Costco with a bunch of strangers, but you can't go to church with people whom you know? And if they're sick and coughing and hacking, you can say, come on, John, you don't come out here when you're sick. Go home. But if you're in the aisles of Costco, you can't run people out. So everything was sort of, as they say, Bass Ackwards, and how they managed COVID and what they were doing to us. And I think this show and having some conversations and getting people to think about things, and if we say things that sound a little edgy, that's a good thing. Because even if somebody, what do they say, you know, being talked about poorly is better than not being talked about at all. So call me crazy, but at least it showed you listened and you're thinking about it. And I think it's lovely Ginger who said, yesterday's conspiracy theory are today's facts. And
that's, and headlines, and today's headlines even. Yeah.
And this is something we're seeing. I go back to things that we said 2 years ago and that can't be true. And it's true. And I mean, just plain true evidence. And I think people are catching on. So anyway, I think that series is going to be good for that. And I hope to get into some topics of what's happening in medical school with this CRT training, even in medical school, and saying that you have to treat white patients differently than black patients, all of a sudden, as though those of us who've always practiced medicine by the Hippocratic Oath, you treat all patients the same. You treat them all with respect. And whoever thought about all that stuff? You take a social history on a patient so you know if they're rich, if they're poor, had a lot of kids, had any money, etc. You don't need the government telling you that you can only give monoclonal antibodies to black people or Mexican people or whatever. That this is so divisive, and I hope to get into some of this conversation. People don't like to talk about it, but guess what? All white people aren't racist. All white people aren't white supremacists. All white people don't hate black people. And I hate to see this sort of toxic, vile teachings that are going on in school and poisoning children's minds.
Well, everything you have to say is so important and so relevant and so on point. You have a wide range of personal experience, unique experiences in terms of white American experiences. You have so much scientific knowledge and so much expertise. Do you do anything with your legal background?
I used to consult on a lot of stuff and pretty much stopped doing that. I think one of the things that the legal background does is it gives me another way to think about things, because that was the biggest thing I noticed in law school, that doctors and lawyers just have two very different ways of approaching problems. And so that's just been very useful in looking at something. Mm-hmm. And of course, it helps me know how to read cases and be able to go back and see some of the patterns that have occurred and how court rulings have changed. And and it also lets you know that
we got to finish in 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
9 seconds. Oh, 8 seconds.
Here we go.
Marilyn Singleton, MD, JD, God bless you. Thank you for being here today. God bless you.